Thank you, music team. That was great. Good morning. My name is Mark Schmore. I'm the director of community care here, and I'll be reading from 1 Kings chapter 3, beginning in verse 5. The Lord appeared to Solomon at Gibeon in a dream at night. God said, "Ask whatever you wish, and I'll give it to you." Solomon responded, "You showed so much kindness to your servant, my father David, when he walked before you in truth, righteousness, and with a heart true to you. You've kept this great loyalty and kindness for him and have now given him a son to sit on his throne. And now, Lord, my God, you have made me your servant king in my father David's place. But I'm young and inexperienced. I know next to nothing. But I'm here, your servant, in the middle of the people you have chosen, a large population that can't be numbered or counted due to its vast size. Please give your servant a discerning mind in order to govern your people and to distinguish good from evil, because no one is able to govern this important people of yours without your help." It pleased the Lord that Solomon had made this request. God said to him, "Because you have asked for this, instead of requesting long life, wealth, or victory over your enemies, asking for discernment so as to acquire good judgment, I will now do just what you said. Look, I hereby give you a wise and understanding mind. There has been no one like you before now, nor will there be anyone like you afterward. I now also give you what you didn't ask for, wealth and fame. There won't be a king like you as long as you live. And if you walk in my ways and obey my laws and commands just as your father David did, then I will give you a very long life." Solomon awoke and realized it was a dream. He went to Jerusalem and stood before the chest containing the Lord's covenant. Then he offered entirely burned offerings and well-being sacrifices and held a celebration for all of his servants. This is the word of the Lord. We have a phrase in our culture, the phrase, "It was only just a dream." You ever use that phrase? It's a famous song by the artist Nelly. You may not be familiar with him. This phrase, it was only just a dream, it can mean a couple different things. If it's a pleasant dream, if it's a dream that's fun and joyful and kind of delightful, and then you wake up for it, it's kind of said with disappointment or regret, like, "It was only just a dream." At other times, if it's a frightening dream, if it's some sort of kind of terrifying nightmare, we wake up and we might say that with a sense of relief. "It was only just a dream." I think I have to be honest, I have weird dreams. Like, I'll spare you the details, but I have strange dreams. And for much of my life, I have given them no thought. I have thought a dream enters my mind, and it's bizarre and random, and I don't really know what to do with it. And the next morning, I wake up and just kind of go, "That was strange." And I move on with my day without a second thought. But last fall, I signed up to be in the Journey class led by Elizabeth Steffen and Lorraine Stewart. And as part of that class, about halfway through that class, we had a Saturday morning retreat, and a woman came to facilitate the retreat who was like a trained, certified kind of dream expert, you could say. Someone who had spent a lot of time studying dreams and studying the psychoanalysis of dreams and studying the spirituality of dreams. And she led us through like this 3-hour workshop of sharing dreams with one another, and kind of giving them more thought than I intended to give. Now, I have to be honest, I went into this workshop very skeptical of whether it would make any sense of some of my bizarre dreams. And we're sitting in a circle at the beginning of the time, and this instructor, she had all of our names in a hat, and she goes, "I'm going to pick out a name out of the hat, and whoever's name I pick out, if they're willing, they'll be invited to share their dream with the whole group as kind of a sample of how this exercise is going to go." Well, wouldn't you know, my name gets drawn out of the hat, and so I have to share this one of these bizarre dreams of mine with 15 other people or so. And it was this interesting experience because I'm sharing this dream, and all of the people in the circle are asking questions. They're just peppering me with questions. Well, what color was the car? Was there anybody else with you at the time? When you said that in your dream, how did you feel? Were you saying that out of a place of fear or surprise? They were just asking all of these questions to try to acquire new information. And then they would take turns interpreting the dream, not by saying like, well, Mark, I think this dream is telling you that you should do X, Y, or Z. But they would interpret the dream from their own perspective. And so they would say, if this were my dream, I think it would be telling me that I needed to do this instead of this. Or if this were my dream, I think it would be telling me that that I don't need to be afraid of this anymore. And after hearing these 15 fellow journeyers kind of collaborate with me on sharing my dream, I kind of came out of that experience going, man, my dreams seem to have a lot more weight than I've given them. One of the things our instructor said is she said, dreams all bring about new information that is meant for our ultimate healing and wholeness. She said that can even be true of nightmares, that sometimes nightmares are an attempt kind of by our subconscious to process information that's just too difficult for us to process any other way. So ever since that dream exercise, I find myself, I'll wake up in the middle of the night with a dream and I'll start to think about it. Sometimes I can't get back to sleep, that's another issue, but I start to think about it and I'm like, oh, maybe this dream is an invitation to this, or maybe this dream is saying that. And then I start hearing things with other people. One story, if you have time to indulge me. Any basketball fans? Okay, this story's gonna go over real well then, since two of you raised your hand. There's a professional basketball player. His name is Nick Young. And Nick Young he played this last season with the Golden State Warriors. He's been a professional basketball player for 10 seasons, which is a good length of time. A few things you need to know about Nick Young. He's quite possibly the most eccentric professional basketball player of his era. He is an outstanding three-point shooter. That's why he's been able to play for 10 seasons. And he has absolutely no interest in playing defense. And is like unapologetic that he just doesn't participate in defense, which is, if you're familiar with the game of basketball, that's half of the game. And so it's actually astounding that he has had a career for 10 seasons while being unapologetic about his unwillingness to play defense. So this most recent season, he's in his team, the Golden State Warriors, they're in a do or die playoff game against the Houston Rockets. The Houston Rockets have the league's most valuable player, the leading scorer in the league, James Harden. And there comes to be this critical point late in the game when the Warriors kind of screwed up and they had Nick Young on the floor at the same time as James Harden. And the Rockets realize this, and so they're like, we're gonna manipulate everything to make sure our best player has the ball and Nick Young has to guard him because this guy does not play defense. And what happens is Nick Young finds himself guarding the best player in the league, and he gets down in like a defensive stance, probably for the first time in his life, and Nick Young tries to drive by him, and he like slaps the ball, and it bounces off Harden, and Nick Young grabs it, and he forces a turnover, like this incredible moment of the game. And then the next possession, virtually the same thing happens. The Rockets want to isolate this terrible defender. He makes a great defensive play, and I'm sitting on our couch at home, and I say to Stephanie, I said, I don't think I've ever seen Nick Young play defense. This is unbelievable. Now, in case you think I'm being hard on this guy, I want to tell you what happened next. The next day, or after the game, I should say, Nick Young talked about a dream that he had when he was visited by quite possibly the only basketball player in history more eccentric, Dennis Rodman. And this is Nick Young's actual quote. Dennis Rodman came in my dream last night, and I was wondering why he came into my dream. He had the purple hair, all kinds of stuff. He told me, tomorrow you're gonna play a little defense. I was like, nah, that's not my game, Dennis Rodman. Why are you in my dream? But it just so happened, I played a little defense. I saw this. I think I told Lorraine about this. I was like, you would not believe this. Like, and I thought, of course, like, deep somewhere in his subconscious, it's like Nick Young has this part of him that's saying, no, if you really want to lead, like, a healthy whole life, at some point in your life, you have to play defense. And it, like, it took, like, a vision of Dennis Rodman to, like, actually speak to the core of who he was and to go out and live his full self. And I was like, that is awesome. That is great. That really has nothing to do with the rest of the sermon. I just thought it was a great story. The ancient Near East culture placed a high value on dreams. If you read through the Bible, like, just start to finish, you will find dream after dream after dream after dream after dream. You know, Joseph was released from prison because he was able to interpret dreams. Abraham had dreams. Daniel had dreams. Mary and Joseph had dreams. Like, there are dreams throughout the Bible, and they're never just dismissed. You never see the phrase, and it was only just a dream. Dreams are given weight. Dreams are given power. So Solomon has a dream. He has a dream in which he is visited by God. And God says to him this question. God says, ask whatever you wish, and I will give it to you. Ask for whatever you wish, and I will give it to you. This is quite a question, right? Now, before we move on, I just kind of want us to linger here in this space just a minute, maybe put ourselves in Solomon's shoes. Maybe if it's helpful, you can just kind of close your eyes for a minute, and just kind of imagine, what would your response be if God came to you in a dream and said, ask for whatever you wish, and I will give it to you? It reminds me of a similar story in the New Testament, Mark chapter 10. Jesus encounters a blind beggar named Bartimaeus. And Jesus asks him, what do you want me to do for you? Very similar question. Ask for whatever you wish, and I will give it to you. What do you want me to do for you? And the answers come in different ways. Solomon's answer, as we read, is to ask for a discerning mind to govern well, to be able to distinguish between good and evil. That's what Solomon asked for. Bartimaeus, when Jesus asks him a similar question, he has to be healed of his blindness. He asks for the gift of sight. I point out the second example of that question just to say there doesn't seem to be a right answer to that question. I'm sure if we asked all 200 and some people in this room, there would be 200 different answers to that question of what God should do for you. There doesn't seem to be a right answer, but I think there might be a wrong one. If you look in verse 11, after Solomon gives the answer, God says, because you have asked for this, instead of requesting long life or wealth or victory over your enemies, asking for discernment so as to acquire good judgment, I will now do just what you said. So there seems to be something in this question that God poses to Solomon which kind of reveals the core values or principles in which he's choosing to live by. And it seems, if I'm reading this correctly, because you have asked for this instead of long life, wealth, victory over your enemies, that there's these other kinds of things that Solomon could have asked for that they wouldn't have fit the moment. They wouldn't have been the right thing to ask for. That there's a temptation, maybe especially for those in positions of power, to be motivated by greed and insecurity, to pursue wealth and prosperity as the ultimate goal. And that would compel someone to ask for great wealth as the one key thing they could ask for. For others, there might be a temptation to be motivated by vengeance, to see the defeat of one's enemies as the ultimate goal. So for them, it might be an ask to conquer their enemies. And it seems as if God is saying to Solomon, those weren't the right things to ask for. You could have asked for those, but those weren't the right things. You have asked for wisdom, and wisdom is a good thing to ask for. Can I confess something to you? So Sometimes I read a scripture and I immediately think of someone else who needs to read it more than I do. I'm sure I'm the only one that does that. So Karl Barth has a famous line where he says the preacher is to prepare for his sermon with the Bible in one hand and the New York Times in the other. And I found that this can be problematic for me because sometimes when I read the news, I get a little bit agitated, right? And so I was reading some news article about some politician, who it is not important, a politician who had been taking bribes from a company. And taking bribes from a company and then doing some kind of illicit things in response to those bribes, and it was being uncovered. And this politician had kind of, at one point in their campaign, had kind of professed to be a person of real Christian integrity, and then it gets uncovered that they're doing these things that are illicit and illegal. And I just kind of had that sense of like, oh, this person needs to read this, you know? Like, I should email him and send him these verses, because he obviously needs to read that. And sometimes when I catch myself doing that, it's kind of a red flag for me. Because I don't think that's the, that tells me that I'm not necessarily reading it the right way. If I immediately read something and then think of the other person who needs to read it more than me, I'm missing the point. So I went back and I read through it a little more slowly, a little more reflectively. And I found myself pausing over verse 7. Solomon says, I am young and inexperienced. I know next to nothing. There is this confession of vulnerability in Solomon's answer as he reflects on what he wants to ask God for. He reflects on his own youth, his own inexperience, and he comes in a place of vulnerability. And from that vulnerability, Solomon asks for the gift of wisdom. Other translations say other things. The translation I read to start was a discerning heart. Another translation says an understanding heart. I think my favorite translation of these words is a listening heart. A listening heart implies that the development of wisdom is ongoing. It's not a place that we arrive at. It's a destination that we're forever pursuing, forever trying to gain more wisdom. And that we gain that wisdom by continuing to listen. Listening implies that I don't have all the answers. There's more that I can learn. There's more that I need to learn. And so the practice of growing in wisdom is inextricably linked with the practice of becoming a better listener. And I think as I look at people who I think are wise, I think that listening happens in different ways. I think we grow in wisdom when we listen to others, especially to people that aren't like us. People that don't look like us, don't think like us, don't act like us. The more we spend time in the presence of those that are different than us and truly listen to them, I think the more we grow into wisdom. This is why I really admire what Morgan does every summer when she takes these high school kids on these immersion trips to different parts of the country. Because what Morgan's doing and what her leadership team is doing when they're taking these kids on these trips is they're saying that there may not be anything more important than learning to listen to someone. That listening can be a transformational encounter. That when we listen, we grow in empathy. When we listen, we become more compassionate. When we listen, we become more humble. When we listen, we become more wise. So we grow in wisdom when we listen to others. We grow in wisdom when we listen to ourselves, when we listen to our own longings and our own fears, those deeper places that it kind of takes a little time to settle into and give voice to. But when we become more in touch with the things that are lying deep on our heart, we become more wise. And finally, we grow in wisdom when we listen to the voice of God, the still, small voice of God's Spirit, which resides in us, which resides in the people around us. One story to end on I remember a time in my life, it was right before I was going to get married. It was right before I was graduating from grad school. And I was freaking out a little bit. I was kind of realizing that I didn't know what I was going to do with my life after graduation. And I remember on a Saturday evening, I was sitting in Steph's apartment, and I was talking to her about kind of the stress that I was feeling about everything, and I was kind of walking back through my life, and I was like, you know, at every point in my life, I've always known what was a year around the corner. When I was a junior in high school, I figured out where I was going to go to college. I knew that a year ahead of time. When I was a junior in college, I'd already landed a job for after college, so I spent the whole next year knowing exactly where I was going to be. When I decided to leave that job and pursue grad school, I made that decision a year ahead of time and prepared for it for a year. And yet here I was at the end of my time in grad school, not really knowing what was around the corner. And I said to Stephanie on a Saturday night, I remember saying to her, all of my life, I've known the next 10 steps I was going to take. And now I can only see the next step. And that's a scary place to be. The next morning, I was in a church service, and the music team was playing a song, and I was kind of singing along, but I was kind of in that place where I was kind of lost in my own thoughts. I'm kind of standing in the back of the sanctuary, and I think I'm probably like staring at a spot on the ground, and just kind of my mind is going a lot of different places, and a guy comes over to me, a guy named Doug, who I'd had probably one conversation with, not like a super close friend or anything, but he comes over to me and he says, Mark, I feel compelled to offer a prayer for you. Is that okay? And I was like, sure, go for it. And so I stand there, and Doug puts his hand on my shoulder, and he's just silent. He's silent for about 30 seconds. And then when he speaks, he says, Mark, I think God wants you to know that it's okay if you don't know the next 10 steps. And then he says, all you have to do is take the next step. I mentioned I don't know Doug that well. I still don't know him that well. I probably had two or three conversations with him after that, and don't keep in touch with him. I'm guessing if I had him up here to interview him, I'm guessing he has cultivated the practice of listening somehow in his life, that he's made an intentional effort to create time and space to listen well, and that listening has given him a voice of wisdom to speak into the lives of other people, and I'm so grateful for that voice. I was so grateful. I continue to be grateful for that voice. I think I would be remiss if I ended our time here this morning without inviting you into a space of listening. And so we're going to have a time before the offering. We're going to have just a time of silence in which I am going to invite you to listen for the voice of wisdom and what it might have to speak to you this morning. And so we'll have a time of silence. It might go on for a little bit, but after a period of time, I'll end the silence with a prayer, and we'll have our offering. So I invite you now into a space of listening.